Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
I'm Pete Siegel, Vice Provost for Information and Educational Technologies here, and let me add my welcome to you. This morning we had a very provocative speaker talking about learning in a very, very new environment, and we are very, very pleased this afternoon to have a speaker who's going to talk about learning in a research in a research university like the University of California. Our speaker is very knowledgeable both about the role of a research university, but also about the University of California. And has many insights from his firsthand experience. He'll tell you more about himself, I think, as part of the presentation to give you the perspective. So it is with great delight that I introduce the Provost of the University of California, Rory Hume.
Thank you, Pete. Good afternoon. I'm delighted to be here with you, and I'm very happy for you to obviously continue to eat. Helpful if you don't speak as you eat. My mother wouldn't approve of that. But please, gentle clashing of cutlery is quite fine, and finishing serving lunch is obviously quite fine. I'd like to talk for a little while and then respond to any questions or suggestions from you, and yet still keep the conference on time. First, let me say how delighted I am that this is happening. I believe it's 11 years since a group of scholars and people who support scholars in UC came together for a discussion of this kind. And second, let me say how grateful I am that you are doing it. I would have been very happy to come to speak to 10 people or 15, but to see 150 from around our great university coming together for this subject is extremely heartening. This is a fascinating area of intellectual endeavor, how to use new technologies. As I understand it, your principal focus is how does the present availability of technologies influence the capacity of people to learn in the broadest sense. And to be thinking about that within the context of this great university of ours is, I think, likely to be particularly productive, not only for the future of people who are learning and teaching in this environment, but influencing what happens elsewhere in the world. The University of California is unique. We are a research-intensive university without parallel. Nobody else has our size and scope and our focused mission. And we are, at our heart, a research university. In recent months, I've been working very hard to advocate for the resources necessary for our future in a very tough budget time, as it often seems to be in California. This is in my sort of sentient administrative life, this is the third cycle of incredibly difficult times. And I've done that in partnership with colleagues from the Cal State system. And Cal State also has a particularly well-focused mission, which doesn't include research, but it includes learning and teaching. And it's interesting to look at ourselves relative to them and say, what is it about UC that is unique in the learning environment? And I believe deeply it's because we are a research-intensive environment, and therefore we provide some unique aspects and some added value in terms of what we can provide to our students. We also have a unique structure and a unique infrastructure, and I'll come back to those in a couple of minutes. As you can tell from my accent, I don't come from around here originally. Like many of you, I was attracted to the University of California from somewhere else. In my case, that somewhere else was Australia, and I came to UCLA in 1975 as a research fellow. And then I was asked to stay to teach and research, and in my field, practice. I come from one of the health science fields, one of the less glamorous ones, dentistry, and it's really quite surprising that a dentist would become provost of the UC system, but I managed. And I was very much steeped in instructional technologies of the 1940s and 50s and surrounded by them in my learning environment. I have one colleague in the room, Dorothy Perry, who was also at that school at that time. And we wrestled, as all of you have wrestled in your disciplines, with what's happening about learning technologies and how do we prepare people to take advantage of the environment in which we work so that they can learn in ways that will equip them for an evolving future. How much of what we do in our relatively short time frame profession are the eternal verities and the classics, and how much is essential for the evolution of a valuable citizen of the profession or of society into the future in terms of capacity to adapt and change and accept or reject new ideas. And I had, as all of you have had, interesting experiences myself in developing curriculum, in working with colleagues worldwide about what where we should go and how we should do it. I actually worked in two areas in my field which enabled me to keep my mind, left brain and right brain, I guess, alive. One was an intensely practical field of how to actually best fix teeth, which sounds very clunky, and why should that happen in a research university, but actually it can. And the other was a biological science field, understanding the nature of one of the unique diseases to the mouth. So I was interested in educating people in my profession and advancing knowledge in those two sort of areas. But like you, very interested in, as new technologies came along, how could we use new technologies? In our case, simulation was a part of that, and group learning was part of that, and problem-based learning was part of that, and internet-based access to information as an adjunct, in our case, to learning was part of that. So I have some appreciation for some of the things that you do, and you, I understand, have an enormous diversity of backgrounds, which is one of the great strengths of this university, as you work with each other to approach these problems. And I don't think that you're going to come out from this conference, obviously, with a template for the next 10 years or even two. You won't do that. It's not like that. Learning technologies the work that we do is simply not like that. You will advance in your field and you'll help each other advance in other fields. And you may discover some things along the way. I had the personal and extraordinary experience after working at UCLA as a young faculty member and later after a return for a while to be a department chair and dean back in Australia, UCSF at a later stage of my career as a department chair, redesigning a curriculum there. Then back to UCLA to be a dean. So learning about the administrative side of what we do in addition to the research and the teaching and, in our case, the practice. I got catapulted into being the provost, or the executive vice chancellor for the UCLA campus. And suddenly my world expanded very dramatically from a very focused area of the health sciences to a great and comprehensive research university with a phenomenal breadth intellectual endeavor and a phenomenally rich variety of learning environments for students. And I had to immerse myself in the College of Letters and Sciences and its enormous value and its challenges, as well as all of the other professional schools. And it was it was one of those times when your mind gets expanded, and it was very, very interesting. I did learn during that time that we were, and this was a decade ago, that we were not yet utilizing the potential of connectivity for many aspects of the campus's work. And my principal concerns were about administrative functions, the accounting systems and the human resources systems. But researchers were beating on the door saying there's a great world out there and we're not moving information around in the ways that we can. There was a growing concern in the library community that things were about to change and UC wasn't changing. And some people were talking about new technologies in assisted learning and teaching. And this was only a decade ago. And that's about the time that people like you last came together in the University of California. And I suddenly found myself with the responsibility with Al Carnesale, who was the chancellor at that time and a very brilliant man, thank goodness. We had to face the challenge on a great campus like UCLA of working out what investments should we make on that campus to deal with this new technology. Would it be valuable to teaching and learning? Would it be valuable to research? Would it be valuable to the administration of the business functions that underpin much of what we do. What we discovered there at that campus a decade ago, and I don't think this is an unusual story, is a phenomenal lack of connectivity using those technologies. The libraries were not connected in any sense at that time that I could detect. Each of our libraries was separate from the other and were developing their own early digital indexing systems, for example, or buying them separately from commercial vendors that were different. We had no common standards of connectivity between accounting in medicine and accounting in the business school, and we had nothing at all to underpin teaching and learning. And we decided to start making investments in those things. And that may have been a mistake. We probably should have realized that we were within the larger framework of the University of California and started designing some common protocols and common activities at that time. Instead, we got on with the business of retrofitting and spending a second time to get the campus to come together, to get one standard of connectivity and one set of protocols. And that was worthwhile in its own way. Fortunately, the internet has become strong enough with some protocols put into it from external to anybody like us that we learnt probably about 7 years ago that we could just ascribe to internet protocols and that would sort of work. But we're still, I think, a long way behind where we could have been if somebody had been truly visionary a long time ago. Fortunately, somebody was visionary in the library community. And Richard Lussier, who was the librarian, I ascribe this to him, I hope I'm right, the librarian at UCSF, with the other librarians, saw the potential of the internet to change the library world and access to information. And Richard persuaded Dick Atkinson when he became president, and Dick was a very visionary man in many ways, that it was worth holding a little bit of money back to stimulate the development of one information access system for the University of California. And it was a phenomenally important thing to do. And because I was UCLA's provost, I had been asked to chair the System-Wide Library and Scholarly Information Committee. And a couple of you in the room were part of that then, and it was a delight for me to do so. And again, for a dentist from Australia, an extraordinary thing to be doing, to be sitting in a room thinking about the future of the libraries of the University of California. And I also had the great delight of chairing the search committee that found the first system-wide librarian. Some people then, and even today or yesterday, because somebody said it to me yesterday, said, why would a system of universities have a library? You know, libraries are buildings that are on campuses, you know. And we were able to see well ahead of that a decade ago, and thank goodness we did, because it saved us an enormous amount of money and given us infinitely greater capability. And I believe that several of you have recognized this morning the enormous value of having really high quality access to information within something that we populate and control. I predict that within a decade, people will probably laugh with fond nostalgia at the idea of a University of California having its library, because the world will have one, I suspect, by then. And the sort of information that we are leading now will become fairly standard for everything that's ever been published. That's a reasonable prediction, as long as society doesn't crumble over the next decade. But we've been at the forefront of that, and that's a wonderful thing. We haven't been as good with administrative systems at all. We're still struggling. I had to live in my present job and role through the horrors that came upon our heads because we couldn't tell who was getting paid what in this university. We had no way of accessing that information, and we got pummeled because we couldn't a couple of years ago, and that was an incredibly expensive lack. And we've got people sitting in rooms with pencil and paper putting together financial reports from around the system today. And that's an incredible lack as well. We're still not... The library is actually our greatest triumph as a system. Sorry to pin this on personal stuff, but it actually helps me frame my own thoughts and presentation here, and I won't go on for a great deal more time. One of the other wonderful things that happened to me when I became provost at UCLA is that I was asked to join a group of people who were thinking about the future of higher education. And it was a California colloquium, it was called, and it was educators from mostly from UC, and we worried a lot about the future of UC, but we also worried about the future of higher education in general how it could be financed in tough times and how we could deal with the rapid evolution of technology. Somebody could get me some water, I'd be grateful, because I've just discovered I need some. And at the, I think, the second or third of those meetings, it was at the conference center at Irvine, which is a fine conference center, as many of you know, and sitting across the table from me was the Chancellor of UC San Diego, Bob Dines. And Bob was a physicist with a very different sort of mind and background than mine, and he said, or I said, I can't remember which of us said first, there's still enormous potential to be tapped in this complex of universities that is the University of California. And he and I followed that conversation on through lunch, and for some reason it appealed to me and it appealed to him, the potential that was still here, that history and some wonderful design, and everybody attributes, I think, correctly to Clark Kerr, the great design of the master plan, which gave us a focused mission relative to Cal State. But because of the historic accident, in one sense, that Berkeley's first child was UCLA, which was the southern branch, it wasn't a separate university. In some senses, it was the same university. Means that today we still have, in one sense, a single university. We have one academic senate. We have one salary scale, I pray, if we can get back to it. We have one academic personnel manual, one set of standards for recruitment and advancement. We are, in some senses, a single university. We have one budget. We go to the state to negotiate once, not 10 times. We have one board of regents, which is a blessing because you wouldn't want to have 10. You really wouldn't want to have 10. And we are, in some senses, one university. We're also 10 universities. And 7 of those universities are operating at the highest level you can in this country. The AAU standard, UCSF is way beyond AAU standards by many measures, and 6 are genuine, and it can't be a member of AAU because it's so focused in its disciplines. But we have 7 out of our 10, and the other, I mean, one's an absolute startup, and the other 2 are aspiring and will make AAU in not very long, is my prediction. Nobody else has done that. We have achieved not a uniform, because there's differences between our campuses, but we've achieved a far higher level of strength and eminence than any other university system has ever done. None of the other systems in the country comes in any way close to that, to what we are. So we're this unique single university in some senses, and also wonderful, great, and in many senses independent and even competitive campuses, with a phenomenal diversity of program. And I was sort of privileged to be in a room with Bob Dines back then talking about that. And I went back to work at UCLA as provost, and Bob Dines went back to work at San Diego as chancellor. And I guess 5 or 6 years later, he became president of the university. And a couple of years later, after some adventures elsewhere, I became his provost. One of the things that Bob had asked Marcy Greenwood, my predecessor, a wonderful person, and unfortunately left us, and I wish, and she's here on this campus, I wish she had stayed in the office of the president, very talented. One of the things he'd asked Marcy to do was to lead a thing called a long-range guidance team, which was to look out 20 years and say, what can this university become? And it shouldn't be a surprise to you that Bob's concept of... Actually, I haven't talked much about the concept. He asked me the question way back, and we talked about it. But the long-range guidance team filled in the concept. And I'll give you my 2-minute download on the concept of how can we still be great 20 years from now. Actually, it's less than 20 now, because he set it out to 2025, so it's time has ticked by. It's 18 years from now, 17 years from now. How can we still be great, given the reduction throughout Western democracies in the commitment to state support in universities such as ours, the shift, therefore, of more burden to the individual, and it's not just something that's happened in California. We've actually held it off better than many places, but it's happening. The great post-World War II, which created the intellectual environment in which most of us were educated, investments in public infrastructure, including education, our voting cohort, have backed away from that. Maybe it was too easy for all of us, I don't know. But we're not supporting that level of investment anymore as a society, and nor are many, many societies. A few are, China is, but we're not. How do we continue to excel with that backing away from public investment? First thing was we push back and we argue and we give every piece of argument that we can to the people of this state and this nation about the value of those investments. And we get now industrial partners to work with us to try and I've been doing that these last 6 months, to get all of the businesses and industries that we've created, from agriculture through to biotech, to say, if you want these things to continue, you have to have, unfortunately, it's great to be with Cal State, you have to have workforce and new intellectual property in order to drive an economy such as ours. But there is a backing away from that. More load on the individual, more partnerships with industry. That's the changing evolution, that's the changing state. What advantages do we have, was the question the long-range guidance team put to itself. And the great advantage is our size, our unity when it matters, and the diversity that we have within our programs. The differences between the campuses and the differences between programs on campuses can be a phenomenal asset. And the fact that we can come together when it counts can be a phenomenal asset. And you are coming together in a way that it counts, and you will be thinking and working about, is there anything that we can tweak in this university to make it better and easier and more effective for us to do the things that we're interested in? And there are some things. That group thought very well and very hard, and I was privileged to become its co-chair about a third of the way through its work, and with some wonderful people to work through and finish its product. Very unfortunately, the compensation stuff, which dragged Bob Dines into a whirlpool of horror, happened at about the same time as we finished our report. But the concept is clear and it's there, and I will make sure that that idea stays alive within the University of California. In brief, it is this. We can come together when it makes sense as one, and we have not tapped into enormous potential in doing so. We mustn't do that in a way that in any way homogenizes what we are. Our diversity, the differences between our campuses, gives us enormous capacity to respond to anything that the state throws up. There's probably no other university in the world that can, in truth, say that everything a research university can do, we can do. Others have to choose, we don't, because of our size, because of our scope. We need to come together much more in administrative systems to save money, to push more money up into our academic activities, and I think of it, I don't want to offend anybody, but I think of it below the line stuff and above the line stuff. Below the line is the accounting systems and the human resources systems. Above the line is the academic programs, the research and the learning and the teaching. We want to get as much money up there and as little money down there as we can, be as efficient as we can, and we do that best through the economies of scale of a university such as ours. And that's not the way we grew. I administered UCLA's administrative things, they all reported to me, and we didn't deal much with any other campus. We did it all ourselves because we said we can do it better than anybody. And everybody else said the same. We're getting out of that now. The library was our first great example of cooperation across the system. The library's sort of on the line. It's part administrative infrastructure. If you think of the work that we do as research and learning, then it's administrative support. And librarians might be offended by that. And it's a part above the line because it's intellectual activity. The library is our great example of coming together well as a system to do something that saved a lot of money and increased functionality for what we do. The health complex has actually cooperated now enormously together. They have a lot of administrative systems in support. They've done that out of pure self-interest in an incredibly competitive market. Our hospitals collaborate enormously now, and they're starting to collaborate above the line. They're starting to say, we won't do pediatric liver transplants here because it's as expensive as hell, but they can do that really well at UC San Francisco. And those kids don't need it this morning, they can have it next week. So that is some rational discrimination above the line. We haven't done very much academically, and we probably shouldn't do very much. When I was UCLA's provost, Carol Crist, wonderful person, was my counterpart at Berkeley, and we were in discussion one evening over dinner, as fortunately occasionally we all get together, and I was saying, we have 83 languages at UCLA and some of them are in real trouble. And she said, I think I have 85 and some of them are in real trouble and I bet you they're the same ones. And we said, well, why don't we think about doing something about that? And out of that conversation came the Language Learning Consortium, which hasn't been a screaming success, but it's terrific that people are getting together to say, how can we rationalize some of the very small languages across the system, and what infrastructures that can we create that will support us all? One of the experiments was Arabic Without Walls. It failed because we didn't have a financial system behind it to support it. And we're not very good at doing things together across the system. One of the most exciting intellectual challenges that we've got coming up in the next couple of years is a system-wide school of global health, a single school across the system in a discipline that draws people from many disciplines that can operate in ways that we've never operated before. The Academic Senate will have to wrestle with it. We're not, even though on the books we allow people to take minors from around the system and get credit for them, we put a whole lot of impediments in people's ways to do that. And I love the system-wide School of Global Health, which a group of wonderful people are working on, and working on very productively, because it'll, if it continues and we bring in substantial external resources, which we believe we can do to make that happen, it will force us to deal with some issues that will allow us to operate together as one on academic programs when it makes sense to do so. Now, some campuses feel a bit threatened by this. Some of our more highly ranked campuses fear being dragged down by being part of the whole. I don't believe that that's in any way a risk. I believe that they can be lifted up even higher by being part of a whole. One of my few disappointments in a job that I find really fascinating is that we haven't yet contributed to the development of MSED in the way that we could as a system. I was talking to Dan Greenstein, the wonderful person that we recruited as librarian and who now helps me with other things, on the way up. I don't think if we leave MSED alone that it will have a trajectory any different than Santa Cruz's trajectory or even Irvine's trajectory. It'll get along on its own, but it'll get on much more slowly than it could today. MSED could still develop its own unique strengths and become a stellar member of this constellation. But we, the rest of the system, could help them advance much more quickly than any of our other campuses has ever done, without being competitive or negative with the other campuses in resource terms. I don't believe that we need to compete with each other in resource terms. I believe that this collective has the potential to make everybody better and proceed faster. So that's, I took more than 2 minutes, didn't I? That's my download on the vision and the concept of UC 2025, the power and the promise of 10. The capacity for us to collaborate productively when it makes sense and still retain the distinctiveness and the unique advancing strengths of each of our campuses and each of its disciplines. Occasionally, we might say, you know, we can let this particular, and the easiest target, unfortunately, is politically placed minority language at a particular campus that is failing. We might be able to say, you know, if you really want to do a major in that, you should move to another campus. And if you want to do a minor, you should go to that other campus in summer. And if you want to be a graduate student in that discipline, then you can go to that other campus. That actually does make sense. Not often do we have to do that. We're not poor by any sense. We're still, in aggregate money, the richest university the world has ever seen. We make Harvard look like small change, except in endowment, unfortunately. But in operating revenues, we're way, way ahead. And so we have phenomenal wealth and phenomenal diversity. We're sort of like India, you know. India is a phenomenally rich country because it feeds all of those people. There's a lot of stresses in India, but it's a great rich country. We are a great rich university, and we're doing very, very well in many, many ways. But we can think about doing things together in smart ways. And occasionally, there is oneness that will work for us. More often academically, there is the distinctive separation, the individual scholar and the small groups of scholars is what makes us tick. And I know that very well. I tried very hard to collaborate with other people in my own academic life. And towards the end, I did actually productively work with a group of four or five people. But most of the time, I worked pretty well on my own with my graduate students and my postdocs. That was how I functioned, and many of us function that way well. coming together works in some disciplines. I'm amazed that physicists can get together in the way that they do. I'm amazed that they can do anything, actually, sometimes. They're fascinating people. My daughter married one, so I'm a little jaundiced about physicists this week. But they seem to come together in groups of hundreds and do things productively. I don't quite know how. Their minds are very different, I think. That's what it is. That was a joke, actually. You should have laughed. my daughter wouldn't. but the individuality, the competitiveness that's very human, and the uniqueness is very much a part of what we are. And our campuses should be different from each other. We shouldn't force them to be different, but we shouldn't force them to be the same. This concept doesn't in any way seek to homogenize. In fact, if anything, it would will bring guided differentiation. Hard to find exactly the right words for that, but if campuses see a niche that nobody else is doing, it'd be great if they moved into it, because then we would have broader capacity in everything. And given the challenges of the world that are being thrown at us all the time, it's terrific to have very, very broad capabilities. But given the scope of some of the challenges, it's terrific that we can come together when it really makes sense academically. I pray that the University of California will come together to solve energy and environment, because it's an enormous challenge for us. I pray that we'll come together with other partners to solve education, public education in particular, for a state such as California. That's an enormous problem also facing us. And I use those two examples because they're the two examples that we decided emerged from the last couple of years of work as the greatest challenges facing California. And we went to the state asking for a little bit of extra money this year in a bad year. So we haven't got the extra money, but we've certainly got the focused attention. The work that you're doing, I don't think taps in all that hard to that concept. It might. There might be infrastructures that you believe will help learning in a new world that we can provide. I think some of those infrastructures are there. The fact that we have a common high standard of connectivity, which was driven principally by our research nature in the University of California, you may tap into. I came here just in time to see some Facebook sort of stuff, and the density of information transfer that enables that, we principally developed for research reasons. And fine, that's there to tap into. We haven't done that much yet, and you might like to do more. But coming together like this to tap into the minds of people who are working under a common set of rules with a common basic goal, and that is to come back to my title, learning and teaching in a research-intensive environment will be beneficial. And I know that all of you who are interested in this as your fields of endeavor will also tap into people from quite other intellectual environments than ours, from other universities, everything to the University of Phoenix, which I'm sure... I actually gave a little talk at the Center for Studies of Higher Education at Berkeley about internet-assisted learning, and I said, you know, there's not a great deal there yet where our university is sort of nibbling at it, but it hasn't changed our lives. And the person in the room from the University of Phoenix said, you are about a decade behind where you should be because it's certainly changed ours. That was a fair comment, but I said in response quietly to him afterwards, you're not a research-intensive university. We are, and we have to maintain that because that is our defined role. They're a very different entity, and bless them for what they are. I guess I wish I was a shareholder in some ways. But, you know, they've done fine for a very different part of society's needs. As you can see, it's a topic I enjoy talking about. Again, bless you for what you're doing. If out of your work come any messages saying, you know, Mr. Provost or Mr. President, it would be helpful if you did ... to enable us to advance in a way that will help us with our mission, and the particular part of the mission that we're very deeply interested in, please let us know. This organization of this group has the capacity to give that sort of feedback. We've had people thinking about this over the last couple of years in a structured way. We will have people thinking about this in a structured way going into the future, because it's very important. What you do is very, very important. A decade ago, at a meeting at UCLA talking about this sort of thing, I said, is there anybody in the room can tell me if internet-assisted instruction actually makes it any better? And does it cost any less? And there were some very eminent educational scholars in the room, and they said, we don't know. And I said, well, why don't you go and find out? I'm not sure that they have. So I think that there is scholarship to be done in this area, and that's part of our job, as well as functionality for our students. Now, I hope that I've left enough time for... I have, just a little bit of time. We've got 10 minutes before you've got to get back into the afternoon sessions. And I'm very happy to take comments, abuse, or questions.
I want to thank you for your support for the Language Consortium and also give you some hope that the investment that you made in us is actually... still bearing fruit. As of yesterday, I'm pleased to report that the Arabic Without Walls will be offered again through Berkeley for the system.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well done. Well, I'm delighted. You know, we saw it as an experiment, but we also saw it as something that was important. We thought, you know, Carol and I felt that if this worked, then other things could work, and we would learn by it. So I'm so delighted that, Robert, you've done what you've done, and everybody who's been working so hard. You're out there on the edge in many ways, and I know other people are doing other things as well, so thank you.
Hello, I'm Bruce Horn. I'm with Media Services at UC Santa Cruz. And your comment at the beginning of your talk interested me that we need to come together more to do things with administrative systems to save money that can then be pushed into the academic mission of the campus. And my experience with that is that at the campus-wide level and at the system-wide level, there may be interest in doing that, but at the department level, and people who are in charge of administrative systems and people who support those, that they are very emotionally and politically invested in maintaining control and having those local systems. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how we could move in that direction in light of those sort of problems.
Well, I'm delighted about the first part of your comment, that there's interest at the campus level and the system level. If we've got that much aligned, that's terrific. There is a... When it really makes compelling sense, I mean, there's good sense and there's absolutely imperative sense, you know. There are always mechanisms to deal with that. You know, you can be brutal with money and orders if necessary. And there is this thing called the president's authority for particular times and events. And Dick Atkinson used that for the libraries, with a willing audience, actually. The librarians wanted it. But he had to hold back money in order to do it, which is a very dramatic act. It wasn't a great deal of money, as I recall, but it was enough to make it work. And so you can do that. So when it really makes sense to do something, and the will is strong enough, then the money and the instructions can come down. We very rarely exercise presidential authority in this university. I don't know if you've noticed. You don't often get an instruction from the president saying you must stand on your left leg and jump up and down, because that would limit the capacity of Chemistry 1 at Santa Cruz to evolve. You know, so we allow a lot of freedom and that. That frustrates some people, and people on the administrative side say, you academics are hopeless. No, we're not hopeless. We're the best university the world's ever seen. So that's far from hopeless. So when it makes sense, we can do it. Because we are a university and we're a mixture of people who are academics and administrators, the best thing to do is to be open about this. Dan Greenstein keeps on teaching me about open. Open is good. Talk about it, and this is the way that I have changed departments. Dabby Perry will remember me working on my particular department at UCSF for 2 years, doing open about a curriculum change. And then everybody was close enough to being on board to do it. So open discussion of value is where you begin, and then you can make decisions, and usually resources are required to be moved in order to do that.
Thank you.
Well, bless you for what you're doing, and enjoy this afternoon and tomorrow. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.